No man hath ever seen God. Most appropriately is this added to confirm the preceding statement, for the knowledge of God is the door by which we enter into the enjoyment of all blessings, and as it is by Christ alone that God makes himself known to us, hence too it follows that we ought to seek all things from Christ. This order of doctrine ought to be carefully observed. No remark appears to be more common than this, that each of us receives, according to the measure of his faith, what God offers to us, but there are few who think that we must bring the vessel of faith and of the knowledge of God with which we draw. When he says that no man hath seen God, we must not understand him to refer to the outward perception of the bodily eye, for he means generally, that as God dwells in inaccessible light, 1 Timothy 6:16, he cannot be known but in Christ, who is his lively image. This passage is usually explained thus, that as the naked majesty of God is concealed within himself, he never could be comprehended, except so far as he revealed himself in Christ, and therefore that it was only in Christ that God was formerly known to the fathers. But I rather think that the evangelist here abides. 29:30. Que la loi n'a reuni l'une ni l'autre, that the law had neither the one nor the other. The points of agreement and of difference between the Old and New Testaments are copiously illustrated by our author. In the Institutes of the Christian Religion, Book 2, Chap. 10.11, ed. 28, com on John, v1. John Calvin. By the comparison already stated, namely, how much better our condition is than that of the fathers. Because God, who was formerly concealed in his secret glory, may now be said to have rendered himself visible, for certainly when Christ is called the lively image of God, Hebrews 1, 3, this refers to the peculiar privilege of the New Testament. In like manner, the evangelist describes, in this passage, something new and uncommon, when he says that the only begotten Son, who was in the bosom of the Father, hath made known to us what was formerly concealed. He therefore magnifies the manifestation of God, which hath been brought to us by the gospel, in which he distinguishes us from the fathers, and shows that we are superior to them, as also Paul explains more fully in the 3rd and 4th chapters of the 2nd epistle to the Corinthians. For he maintains that there is now no longer any veil, such as existed under the law, but that God is openly beheld in the face of Christ. If it be thought unreasonable that the fathers are deprived of the knowledge of God, who have the prophets daily going before them and holding out the torch, I reply, that what is ascribed to us is not simply or absolutely denied to them, but that a comparison is made between the less and the greater, as we say, because they had nothing more than little sparks of the true light, the full brightness of which daily shines around us. If it be objected, that at that time also God was seen face to face, Genesis 32, 30, Deuteronomy 34, 10, I maintain that that sight is not at all to be compared with ours, but as God was accustomed at that time to exhibit himself obscurely, and, as it were from a distance, those to whom he was more clearly revealed say that they saw him face to face. They say so with reference to their own time, but they did not see God in any other way than wrapped up in many folds of figures and ceremonies. 31. That vision which Moses obtained on the mountain was remarkable and more excellent than almost all the rest, and yet God expressly declares, thou shalt not be able to see my face, only thou shalt see my back, Exodus 33, 23, winking face. By which metaphor he shows that the time for a full and clear revelation had not yet come. It must also be observed that, when the fathers wished to behold God, they always turned their eyes towards Christ. I do not only mean that they beheld God in his eternal speech, but also that they attended, with their whole mind, a